Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo.
And tonight we have an interview for you with...
I'm hoping we do.
I haven't been able to set it up.
I've been having difficulty with our recording devices. But nevertheless, we're going to try.
It should be okay. The tape was fine.
Hated last night, last time.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so...
Well, then you have to get a new machine. Can't go on like that way. Well, anyway, we'll be bringing you some news.
Yeah, in 1 second here, I'm going to do that.
And
I don't know why you was playing. Why you wanted to play that song?
I mean, when we should play it.
I don't know why you wanted to. One Moment in Time.
Oh, One Moment in Time. That was Whitney Houston. And the answers are all up to me. Give me one moment in time when I'm racing with destiny. Well, I guess what he's telling us is we have the answers and we got to do something about it. This is what David Icke says.
It's a YouTube audio video, but it doesn't play anything. Oh, probably because I haven't.
Say I live. I want to be.
Nicholas Sarkozy bans tall workers from factory walkabout.
A 5 feet, 5-inch tall leader is alleged to have sent aides to the plant ahead of an official visit to stop anyone over 5'6" from appearing alongside of him. The claims come just 1 week after Mr. Sarkozy was reported to have banned tall bodyguards from his presidential protection team.
Jeez.
That's because he's such a little toad. The French toad. That's what I call him. Let's see what else. Arrogant little French toad. What is his wife going to do? Does she have to cut off her legs?
Yeah, she's much taller than he is. The claims come just a week after Mr. Sarkozy was reported to have banned tall bodyguards.
From his presidential protection team. Mr. Sarkozy, who wears platform heels to disguise his size, is due to visit the Turbomeca Aeronautics factory near Toulouse on June 22nd. But local paper, the Republic de Paris, said he sent two staff there first to whittle out the tall ones. One unnamed engineer working there told the paper, "I'm almost 6 feet tall, and I was told I was not allowed near the official reception group." The paper commented, "It seems people at the factory decided it was better to yield to the president's wishes than face exile to the land of the pygmies." Last year, Mr. Sarkozy was accused of deliberately picking short people to appear alongside him on TV footage on another factory visit.
The claim was made by a woman who said she was chosen to stand next to the 5'5" French president when he visited Ferrosia car plant site in Normandy because he was shorter than him. The woman told the French media afterwards it was designed so that no one would appear bigger than the president. Access to the factory was restricted so that no one could be shown alongside of him. And in May 2009, Sarkozy was pictured using a footstool to make a speech during the D-Day commemorations in Normandy.
And did he have to stand on it?
Yeah. And the decision to use the 6-inch wooden box is said to have been made because he was using the same lectern as Gordon Brown.
Barack Obama and Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper, all considerably taller than Sarkozy.
A 5'5" tall in his bare feet, Sarkozy is even shorter than his famous predecessor Napoleon, who was 1 inch taller. The president is also one of the world's shortest heads of state, only slightly taller than North Korea's Kim Jong-il. And Russia's Dmitry Medvedev. Yeah, who cares? And both of whom are 5'3" tall. Holy cow. The Elysee Palace has always denied any rumors Sarkozy handpicked short people as televised public appearances. That's kind of funny, huh?
Yeah. Oh, he's very vain.
Yeah. Oh.
Doesn't make him any taller. He's still short.
Rothschild, Zionist, Harper are once in the view. Okay, well, it gets a little weird, but... James,
Arbuthnot, let's see what that is. James Arbuthnot is chairman of the Defense Select Committee in the UK Parliament. I don't even know who he is.
He's also chairman of the Conservative Party Friends of Israel. This is a guy, this is just somebody picking up, he's involved in
the
British
The
government.
Hidden wealth of the Catholic Church. This might be interesting. The Catholic Church is currently being shaken by a number of financial scandals, not only in Franconia, but also Augsburg, another Bavarian city where Bishop Walter Mix's dip into funds from a foundation that runs children's home recently made headlines.
It's amazing how they have no regard for kids.
No.
They molest them, they steal from their funds, they
it's disgusting.
They have no regard for these children. Catholic people have no regard for people but
Well, that's why they keep saying, have
kids.
As many children as you want.
And no regard for kids. It's amazing.
More than 40 million pounds have gone missing in the Diocese of Magdeburg in eastern Germany. 5 million have disappeared in Limburg near Frankfurt. And it was recently discovered that a senior priest in the Diocese of Münster had 30 secret bank accounts. And while parishes throughout Germany are cutting jobs and funds for community work, many bishops are still living on the high horse. A brand new residence, an ostentatious home for their retirement, restoration of Marian Column to the tune of £120,000. None of these expenditures presents a problem to a high-ranking church official from the Tier in the west to Passau in the southeastern corner of Bavaria, where coffers are brimming with cash.
Places the blatant disparity along with reports of mismanagement, misappropriation, and pomposity have prompted the faithful to challenge church officials. They are accusing many bishops of just covering up the problem as they did in the sex abuse scandal. They are determined not to allow anyone to see behind the curtain into their parallel world of bulging bank accounts and hidden assets. In some cases have buttressed their power for centuries. The only aspect of church finances that is public is the diocesan budget.
Diocesan.
Well, which derives its funding from the church tax. But the church's true assets remain in the shadows.
Now all of this wealth is becoming a political issue, however. The unemployed recipients of housing assistance, families, communities, businesses, the military, in the coming years, the federal government plans to deprive them all of billions of euros, but the Church of all things is being spared, and hardly anyone questions the generous support it receives from the government.
Oh.
Financially speaking, Germany's dioceses are in excellent shape. The Catholic Church claims that it's poor, but the truth is that it hides its wealth, says Carsten Freck, a Berlin political scientist who, after years of research, is publishing
Violet Book of Church Finances.
The Lutin Book. Kirchenfonden.
All right. The Violet Book of Church Finances this fall.
Freck estimates the cash assets of the church's legal entities at about 50 billion pounds. The Catholics, who are not releasing their own figures, accuse Freck of being a prejudiced, atheistic critic of the church.
The assets accumulated over the centuries are invested in many areas, including real estate, church-owned banks, academies, breweries, vineyards, media companies, and hospitals. The church also derives income from stock holdings, foundations, and bequests. As a rule, all of this money flows into the accounts of the so-called Bishop C. Only a bishop and his closest associates are familiar with this shadow budget, which tax authorities are not required to review. And the public budget of diocese consist of far less than their total finances.
The complicated web is handled with such secrecy that not even the financial department heads of all dioceses openly discuss their finances with one another. Seemingly baroque structures make these finances even more difficult to fathom. Depending on the diocese, diocese. The administrators of the church funds can be members of church tax council, a diocesan tax panel, a financial board, or an administrative board. Sometimes assets are also spun off into foundations. Of Journey Unity's 27 dioceses, 25 refused to provide information in response to a Spiegel survey, noting this information is not made public. Only two dioceses, Magdeburg and the Archdiocese of Berlin, which was on the verge of bankruptcy a few years ago, were somewhat more accommodating, probably because they have so few assets to hide in the first place. They had to give up all their money, I guess, or a lot of it.
Secret assets. The Vicar General of a well-heeled diocese, on the other hand, said, yes, the assets in the bishop's see are secret, but perhaps it would be better if you wrote confidential. When asked to explain his secretiveness, a spokeswoman of the Diocese of Limburg responded, that's just the way it is. Finally, a representative of the German Bishops' Conference said, I don't want to talk to you about this. Elected lay representatives of the base are hardly more successful. They face a wall of silence, even when they are responsible for financial supervision in their diocese. One of them is Herbert Steffen, whose congregation appointed him to the Diocesan Council in Trier. Steffen, 75, is not exactly a fierce critic. Former furniture manufacturer, he comes from an arch-Catholic family of entrepreneurs in the Mosel River region. His concern was as straightforward as it was conservative. He wanted to make sure that his diocese was in solid financial shape.
The businessman was irritated by his experiences in diocesan council. I was surprised by the small size of the budget. It was something I thought we ought to look at, he says. At a council meeting, he asked a confidant of the bishop whether this was the entire budget. There is also the budget of the bishop's see.
But it isn't intended for the public. The official replied when Steffen asked, are you telling me that we can't see it either? The official said no. And Trier, Germany's oldest diocese, is a good example of the Catholic divide between rich and poor. Bishop Stephen Ackerman, who also oversees sex abuse cases for the German Bishops' Conference, can be quite generous in financial matters, particularly when they involve prestigious projects adjacent to his bishop's place.
Palace.
For example, the diocese currently has $1 million earmarked for a planned renovation of the square behind the cathedral. Local church authorities want to make sure that the area looks its best, just in case the Pope decides to lead an annual pilgrimage to the Holy Robe in 2012, joining the faithful in worshiping a robe that supposedly contains scraps from the robe Jesus wore. There's more, but I don't think I want to even go any further. Do you?
Told you. They got a lot of money, which they don't have to account
for.
They're
all crooked bastards. Mm. All crooked bastards.
And they're not even taxed.
Oh, I don't mind. I don't know, maybe this will cheer us up. I don't know if I want to.
George Carlin.
Religion is bullshit, okay? And this is a YouTube video. Let's see what it says.
In the bullshit department, a businessman can't hold a candle to a clergyman. Because I got to tell you the truth, folks. When it comes to bullshit, big time, major league bullshit, you have to stand in awe. In awe of the all-time champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. No contest. Religion easily has the greatest bullshit story ever told. Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you. loves you and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all powerful, all perfect, all knowing, and all wise. Somehow, just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars, they pay no taxes, and they always need a little more. Now, you talk about a good bullshit story. Holy shit. Something. This is sincere. I want you to know, when it comes to believing in God, I really tried. I really, really tried. I tried to believe that there is a God who created each of us in his own image and likeness, loves us very much, and keeps a close eye on things. I really tried to believe that, but I got to tell you, the longer you live, the more you look around, the more you realize something is fucked up. Something is wrong here. War, disease, death, destruction, hunger, filth, poverty, torture, crime, corruption, and the ice capades. Something is definitely wrong. This is not good work. If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed. Results like these do not belong on the resume of a supreme being. This is the kind of shit you'd expect from an office temp with a bad attitude. Just between you and me, in between you and me, in any decently run universe, this guy would have been out on his all-powerful ass a long time ago. And by the way, I say this guy because I firmly believe, looking at these results, that if there is a God, it has to be a man. No woman could or would ever fuck things up like this. If there is a God, if there is, I think most reasonable people might agree that he's at least incompetent and maybe, just maybe, doesn't give a shit. Doesn't give a shit. Which I admire in a person and which would explain a lot of these bad results. So rather than be just another mindless religious robot, mindlessly and aimlessly and blindly believing that all of this is in the hands of some spooky, incompetent father figure who doesn't give a shit, I decided to look around for something else to worship, something I could really count on. And immediately, I thought of the sun. Happened like that. Overnight, I became a sun worshiper. Well, not overnight. You can't see the sun at night. First thing the next morning, I became a sun worshiper. Several reasons. First of all, I can see the sun. Okay? Unlike some other gods I could mention, I can actually see the sun. I'm big on that. If I can see something, I don't know, kind of helps the credibility along, you know? So every day I can see the sun as it gives me everything I need. Heat, light, food, flowers in the park, reflections on the lake. An occasional skin cancer, but hey, at least there are no crucifixions, and we're not setting people on fire simply because they don't agree with us. Sun worship is fairly simple. There's no mystery, no miracles, no pageantry, no one asks for money, there are no songs to learn, and we don't have a special building where we all gather once a week to compare clothing. And the best thing about the sun, it never tells me I'm unworthy. Doesn't tell me I'm a bad person who needs to be saved. Hasn't said an unkind word. Treats me fine. So, I worship the sun. But I don't pray to the sun. You know why? I wouldn't presume on a friendship. It's not polite. I've often thought people treat God rather rudely, don't you? Asking, you know, trillions and trillions of prayers every day. Asking and pleading and begging for favors. Do this, give me that, I need a new car, I want a better job. And most of this praying takes place on Sunday, his day off. Not nice. And it's no way to treat a friend. But people do pray, and they pray for a lot of different things. You know, your sister needs an operation on her crotch. Your brother was arrested for defecating in a mall. But most of all, you'd really like to fuck that hot little redhead down at the convenience store. You know, the one with the eye patch and the club foot. Can you pray for that? I think you'd have to. And I say, fine, pray for anything you want. Pray for anything. But what about the divine plan? Remember that? The divine plan. Long time ago, God made a divine plan. Gave it a lot of thought, decided it was a good plan, put it into practice. And for billions and billions of years, the divine plan has been doing just fine. Now you come along and pray for something. Well, suppose the thing you want isn't in God's divine plan. What do you want him to do? Change his plan? Just for you? Does it seem a little arrogant? It's a divine plan. What's the use of being God if every rundown schmuck with a $2 prayer book can come along and fuck up your plan? But here's something else, another problem you might have. Suppose your prayers aren't answered. What do you say? Well, it's God's will. Thy will be done. Fine. But if it's God's will and he's going to do what he wants to anyway, why the fuck bother praying in the first place? Seems like a big waste of time to me. Couldn't you just skip the praying part and go right to his will? It's all very confusing. So to get around a lot of this, I decided to worship the sun. But, as I said, I don't pray to the sun. You know who I pray to? Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci. Two reasons. First of all, I think he's a good actor, okay? To me, that counts. Second, he looks like a guy who can get things done. Joe Pesci doesn't fuck around.
That was George Carlin, religion.
He passed away, hasn't he?
Yeah, he died last year.
What a funny guy.
Religion is bullshit. Okay, that's so very true. Anyway, we got nuclear Israeli
nuclear missile boats off Iranian coast.
Right. Israel is stationing three of its five Dolphin-class submarines in the Red Sea, and will keep one of them operating off the Iranian coast at all times. These subs will be armed with cruise missiles equipped with nuclear warheads.
Oh, great.
Gee, I wonder where they got those from.
And the Israelis have developed a cruise missile which has a range of 1,500 kilometers.
Carries 200 kiloton nuclear warheads.
The objective of deploying Newsom sub is to further enhance deterrence to any nation launching a nuclear strike against Israel. If one of the Dolphins are always at sea, even a first strike against Israel would not prevent a nuclear strike by submarine-launched nukes.
Yeah. So, I wonder
so
where
you threaten
they got.
Everybody?
I wonder where they got those. Did they develop them themselves? Isn't that against the UN Convention for Nuclear Arms? They haven't even declared that they have arms, and everybody knows they do.
The two new Dolphins cost about $650 million each, with Germany picking up a third of the coast as part of the... Do they mean cost?
Where is that? It says that. The two Dolphins cost $600 million and...
a third of the cost, they wrote coast. A third of the cost as part of their reparations for World War II atrocities against Jews. The Dolphins have a fuel cell-based propulsion system which enables them to stay underwater for over a week at a time. The Dolphins are also very quiet and very difficult for the Iranians to hunt down and destroy. The first three Dolphins didn't even have the air-independent propulsion system.
I thought, now the irony here is that the $650 million each that Germany picked up a third of the cost.
So they picked
part
up
of their reparations award. Now, so they paid a third of the cost of their nuclear weapons.
So that they can threaten other countries.
So that they can threaten other countries. Not Germany, but, Germany paid for the Israelis...
to have those subs.
To have those subs so that they could threaten other countries.
Great.
As part of their Holocaust reparations. It's the insanity of this. The insanity of the Israeli, conscience is just sick, man. Anyway,
I can't even read the rest of it. It's ridiculous.
It's totally freaking ridiculous, and it just gets more and more stupid. To believe that these guys can be threatening. It's just sick. Can't stand Israel.
Oh, here it is. Obama to push nightmare carbon tax in Oval Office speech.
He didn't do it, though.
No. Nope.
That was yesterday, but he did not do it. Oh, no, that's today. I don't think he did that. Today is Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the 16th today, but maybe he did.
Did he give another speech?
Huh? Not in that one. President Barack will tonight this.
Oh, that's talking about June 15th.
Tuesday, June 15th. Okay, it was published today.
Yeah, he really didn't talk about
that.
He
didn't push that, no. No. He has been busy floating propaganda about how Obama cap and trade legislation would cost American average of $79 to $146 a year. In reality, as we have documented, the bill would seem some $2.9 trillion shaved off the economy by the year 2050, if enacted. And the legislation would also reduce GDP by 6.9%, a figure comparable with economic meltdown from 1929 to 1930.
The green economy has left Spain with 20% unemployment, virtually bankrupt, and in need of being bailed out by Europe. A newly leaked from Spain's Zapatero administration outlines how Spain's green economy initiatives have been a financial disaster in this so-called green economy. Over 2.2 jobs are lost for every green job created. In addition, the alarming indications that strongly suggest those closest to BP and major stockholders like Goldman Sachs exploited foreknowledge of the accident to position themselves financially to avoid the consequences only makes Obama's exploitation of the disaster even more insidious. Tune into the Alex Jones Show tomorrow for a full report on Obama's new push for a nightmare green economy backed up by a carbon tax on the very substance humans exhale, which will be enforced by an army of environmental police who will seek to regulate and control every aspect of our existence in the name of saving the planet from a contrived fraud, man-made global warming.
That's something to look forward to there.
Yeah, nice.
Okay, ROV Films, oil leak coming from rock cracks on the seafloor.
Hmm, let's put that on.
Yeah, it's just there's no talk on it. It's just showing oil seeping through the rocks on the seafloor.
So it could be leaking all over the Gulf of Mexico.
It is.
Not just in that one spot.
It is. But I read something today that stated that the ocean floor is constantly leaking oil.
Anyway, always?
Naturally, yeah. But this was, of course, you know.
An exaggeration of what usually happens.
Right. Fox in the Hen House, can we trust Israeli security companies? Would you go to a doctor who worked in a germ warfare lab? Would you hire a check forger to work in a bank? Would you hire a child molester to watch your kids? Well, we have hired Israel to watch our ports, our nuclear facilities, our airports, and much more. A country we know for certain will give us a phony video, an altered container scan, or a falsified radiation reading if it serves their purpose. That'd be interesting. This week we learned that Israel has staged scenes from the Freedom Flotilla attack using actors in common Hollywood special effects called Double Negative. The actors were shown standing among peaceful humanitarian workers waving weapons around. This became a problem when the staged Israel used wasn't quite the same. We ended up with a film showing our Israeli terrorists walking through solid steel time and time again. Israel film industry has been suffering of late. Even the phony bin Laden videos have given over to audio. The new bin Laden they used was doing Marlboro commercials in Egypt before they took him on.
It is a given that Israel has destroyed any credibility it once had. It is one thing when a cheap setup job is leaked, but this one was set out special delivery government of the State of Israel stamped all over it. This was pure suicide. Only idiots that want to be fooled, politicians in the pocket of AIPAC, and Fox News were really taken in. Frankly, with no integrity to sacrifice in the first place, humiliation is impossible anyway. With the news cycle such as it is, a new massacre or terrorist bombing could have happened at any time. As Israel needs one quickly, it is quite possible we may get one.
I guess I never thought that any country could go as far as to place people spawned just like in a video game and sometime use as vital evidence supporting Israel as defending themselves. Not much hope of making the dog hunt anymore. Maybe that dog never should have been tossed in the well at birth. But Israel's continual ranting about terrorism might all have been more movie magic from day one. We now have to go back to decades and look for photos and videos that are now likely to have been altered, like the films Israel sent of the dancing Palestinians on 9/11. Nothing was altered on these. They were simply many years old. Just like the still photo of weapons Israel claims that they found on the Freedom Flotilla, photos with digital signatures from as early as 2006. What Israel was presented to us as self-defense is now an act of terrorism. I don't know if putting armed terrorists in a film, Israeli actors dressed up with steel waving steel rods around, as a crime, but it should be. Were there any question? The film films make it clear. What we need to know is why has falsifying evidence of terrorist acts become an industry in Israel, a nation that handles the security, including the video security, of most world airports, including nearly all airports in the United States. I didn't know this.
Yes, we did. We read it last year.
I didn't know they had all the security in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That's freaking sick. And who would hire a check forger to work in a bank? Would you hire a child molester to watch your kids? Well, we have hired Israel to watch our ports, our nuclear facilities, our airports, and much more. A country we know for certain will give us a phony video, an altered container scan, or a falsified radiation reading if it serves their purpose. I think it can Americans continuing
piping on about Israel as our ally, the great democracy, the bastion of liberty in the Middle East. Even the ill-named Simon Wiesenthal Center, or ADL, issuing a mass fatwa declaring the entire population of the planet either anti-Semites or self-hating Jews, or a combination of both, won't get them past this one. Israel already killed off their Auschwitz card when they were caught dubbing "Go Back to Auschwitz" over the screams for help from flotilla wounded like ventriloquists. We even heard that Israel is now telling Palestinians to go back to Gauschwitz. Odd sense of humor. Gazowitz.
There is no doubt America has burned in the flood of intelligence.
Burned in the flood of intelligence received from Israel after 9/11. Their agenda, a long history of grudges, was settled at the cost of thousands of American lives still being lost. A question comes to mind: why develop an industry of falsifying evidence of terrorism? What comes to mind at first is, of course, that Israel has a multi-billion-dollar industry in selling security equipment and services managed by Mossad personnel, who are allowed not to work in the private sector and are still actively serve their government. But does it go deeper? If you can and will, as Israel has shown us, add people into videos, then you can also remove them. When we see videos of Arab terrorists planting bombs or firing weapons in Mumbai, what else are we not seeing? Have the players been switched? Have some people been removed? And why? Thus far, we have seen proof that Israel creates phony passports from any country and moves agents where they choose. We have also seen videos altered to cover the murder of innocent civilians. From this, we can guess that when we see a video of a rock-throwing teen being shot at, it may be well have been a child carrying school books instead. This is exactly the kind of thing done with videos from the Freedom Flotilla, and no reasonable person could imagine that Israel sat on this 35-year-old technology without ever using it.
And were phony videos and agents using falsified passports using the cover of the 7/7 bombing in London? Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that at all.
Yeah.
And a curious set of circumstances involving the Netanyahu visit, alterations of his plans to avoid areas under attack during the video showing Arab-looking suspects under suspicion. Now we know it could have been anyone or no one. The bombs could have been planted at any time and remotely activated. And that, you know, the Israelis have been doing this forever. But,
yep.
You know, so once you take that step into deception, or the moment, you are caught doing something you may have done for decades, you can't close that door again. Most intelligence professionals recognize that a significant percentage of Israelis who do business around the world are employed by their intelligence agencies. Many of these individuals cause us
carry
Australian, German, British passports. Many more seem to be Arabs, speaking local dialects with perfection. Many American contracting companies have had Israeli agents placed among their employees, our own Pentagon has it. I mean,
yeah.
Who's kidding? Who? The chief of staff of the Obama administration, Rahm Emanuel, was a member of the.
Mossad?
No, he's a member of the Israeli military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was also,
his father was some kind of agent.
His father was a freaking terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
Was an Israeli terrorist, okay? A member of the early terrorist group. We've got a bunch of shit running around here, and we can't get it off our back, all right? Times Square was supposed to get us into to forget the Mossad fiasco in Detroit, another airport managed by Israelis. When the Indian passengers picked out of by the bomb dogs was taken into custody, where did that video go? What was his name? Did he simply disappear? Was he sent back to Israel like the Dancing Israel video crew on 9/11? When the government of Yemen reported that the Al-Qaeda operatives, you remember, the ones Dick Cheney released from Guantanamo, had been in contact with Israeli handlers, where did that story go? Yemen has their laptops filled to the brim with helpful hints on running operations, Mossad style.
The issue, then, is one of trust. Can an airport be guided by the same people who shuffle assassins and terrorists through airports? Can we accept a group of special effects clowns to handle video security footage that we may end up going to war over? No matter how cheaply priced or how nicely packaged the stolen American technology being offered is, shouldn't it matter who we do business with? And this article was by Gordon Duff, and he's a Marine Vietnam veteran, 100% disabled vet. He has been featured commentator on TV and radio, including Al Jazeera, and his articles have been carried by news services around the world. He's been a UN diplomat.
Defense contractor, and
is widely published.
Yeah, the fact that he's a Foreign Affairs Journal contributor bothers me, because that means he's probably a member of the CFR. And he has to be in order to be published in the Foreign Affairs Journal. All right? So I think I would watch this guy. I don't like that kind of background on anybody. Church makes girl apologize for being raped.
Tape? Can you see if it'll
work? It's not going to work. I don't want to ruin the tape. I'll have to do it on something else. The last one just ate it. That's why I don't want to run it again. If you want to, we can find another tape to run or something. But I would do that interview, but I ruined the tape last week.
Millions of patients should never be... Oh, you turned it. I
want to
read this
okay.
Next one.
Okay, yeah, that looks good then. WikiLeaks founder of Afghan massacre video. Okay.
You can go back to that one. Go down to the next one. Millions of patients should never be prescribed antidepressants, scientists say. Roughly half the population should never be prescribed antidepressant drugs because they are only likely to become more depressed, according to a new study conducted by researchers from Columbia University and the New York State Psychiatric Institute and published in the journal Neuron. Scientists have known for some time that antidepressant drugs only work in about half of patients. Researchers discovered that although the drugs are designed to raise circulating levels of neurotransmitter chemical serotonin in the brain, they actually produce the opposite effect in a large number of people. The more antidepressants try to increase serotonin production, the less serotonin they actually produce, said Renee Hinn.
Wow. So much for that, huh?
The more antidepressants do increase. An estimated 11% of U.S. women and 5% of men in non-institutionalized settings are currently taking antidepressants. Genetic and brain imaging studies have led some scientists to believe that the explanation for this effect lies in the actual makeup of the brain, specifically in the numbers of 1A serotonin receptors found in the RAF neurons deep in the brain center. Although high numbers of these receptors on RAF neurons are correlated with decreased responsiveness to antidepressants, scientists have had trouble testing this hypothesis directly. In the new study, scientists genetically engineered mice to contain either high or low numbers of 1A receptors in the RAF neurons. They found that mice with higher levels of receptors, antidepressants actually lowered serotonin levels rather than that doesn't make sense. Consistent with the effects seen in people whose bodies resist the drug, so it consistently lowered the levels. The researchers then lowered the number of receptors in these mice and retested them. The mice then became responsive to the drugs. By simply tweaking the number of receptors down, we were able to transform a non-respondent into a responder, Hinn said. Rather than suggesting that antidepressants use be scaled back, however, Hinn and colleagues expressed eagerness to find out ways to suppress the activity of some of the 1A neurons in the RAF receptors of people who are resistant to the drugs so that everyone can be treated with them equally.
Okay, I wondered if you wanted to read this this one we were looking at. I pulled up last night, but at the very Canadian coup in Haiti. I don't know if you want to get into that, but I got the other. This one I thought should be mentioned since we just read that thing about the Israelis forging stuff. It says, Israeli deputy, this is from newsantiwar.com. Israel deputy FM says 75 Al Qaeda mercenaries were on the aid ship.
Huh.
Right, and this is like extreme bullshit meter.
This is what they said.
Yeah. Israeli deputy foreign minister Danny Ayalon appeared on CNN's CPS show today. Excuse me, and once again changed the official story related to the Israeli attack on the Mavi Marmara aid ship 2 weeks ago. Ayalon said, and I that Israeli troops. Oh, wait a minute, let's cut out the piece here. And they ambushed the Israeli troops before their eventual capture, and armed with assault rifles. It is unclear if Ayalon 75 Al Qaeda are in addition to the 50 Turkish troops or not. The 50 troops were themselves a revision from the initial story that the crew attacked them with makeshift bats. And in either case, Israel's claims do not hold up to even casual scrutiny, as neither the assault rifles, nor the arms, nor the Turkish soldiers, nor the Al-Qaeda members were found on board the ship. In fact, Israel had already released every single person who was on board the aid ship, and none was charged with a single crime. One would imagine Israel, which styles itself as the central front in the war on terror, would have had the presence of mind to detain 75 members of Al-Qaeda if indeed their military had captured them.
Hmm.
So what a crock of crap they're putting out there. And let's see, we got, there was one other that was very important that I wanted to mention tonight. I don't know if you want to read it or not. Cat is getting...
cranky.
My cat's not cranky. Maybe you can read this one on the potential cancer drug phone. But I'll just read this and then we can move along. Riot police storm. If you think everything's going cool and going well at the stadium
World Cup.
In South Africa and the World Cup things,
not as smooth as you think.
All right. Riot police storm World Cup stadium as security staff stage sit-in over low wages.
Yeah, the poor people weren't paid.
Yeah, this was on Mail Online. Riot police fired tear gas and rubber bullets to break up the World Cup's first episode of crowd unrest by stadium staff. Officers wearing helmets charged at least 400 stewards protesting about low wages. The clashes came after workers refused to leave the grounds at the seaside resort of Durban last night, following Germany's 4-0 win over Australia, claiming they had been underpaid. After refusing to disperse, around 300 police used stun gun grenades, tear gas, and rubber bullets to drive the crowd out of the Moses Mabhida Stadium, most of whom they regrouped nearby. After separating male and female protesters, officers surrounded the groups and spent hours in negotiation before the crowds finally broke up peacefully. One female protester suffered a minor injury after being hit by a rubber bullet. Today, FIFA ordered local organizers to ensure its security contractors had settled all pay disputes to prevent further strikes from derailing the tournament. Now, go on here. Protesters said they had gathered after the match to complain to bosses, claiming they had been paid a fraction of what had been promised. And I can't even begin to pronounce this guy's name.
Don't bother.
Said that he had expected to be paid £23, or R250, whatever that means, a day, but instead was paid £17 and R190 in cash at the end of the match. Some said they had been promised £135, or 1,500 Rs. Okay,
I don't know what their
currency is per shift at the dry run before the tournament began. Others complained that no transportation had been provided for them, and that by the time they escorted crowds out of the stadium after every evening matches, there was no public transport running for them to get home. So they were being screwed over royal. One more paragraph here. The organizing committee will engage in its stadium security provider to avoid a repeat of situations during the course of the tournament. Organizing committee spokesman said. A police spokesman confirmed tear gas had been used to help end the lengthy protest, but nobody was seriously injured. It's a concern that the security company didn't have this pay dispute settled before the tournament. Dialogue will continue to ensure this sort of thing doesn't happen again. It just amazes me, though, that, you know, they figure they're going to screw the poor the poor guy. You know, who's trying to get
a chance to work. Protests, they had no way of getting home.
He had a chance to work for the first time they screw him over.
Well, they provided no transportation, and then they kept them so they couldn't get on public transportation. How were they supposed to get home?
Yeah, and then they wouldn't even pay him.
And then they wouldn't pay him. Nice.
Jerks. Anyway, let's see. We got about 10 more minutes, but I wanted to see if you.
I can't read that. It's too small.
Oh, you can't.
No,
sorry.
I can't see it.
Okay.
There's not enough light.
Well, this is kind of an important one because looks like there may have.
Unless you bring the light over, then I could see.
For some of the problems here. Potential cancer drug found in Australian rainforest. A potential cancer drug developed from an Australian rainforest plant is set to progress to human trials after fighting off inoperable tumors in pets, the company behind it said Monday. Queensland's firm Cube Biotics Limited said its drug EBC46, derived from the seeds of a tropical rainforest shrub, was ready to be tested on humans after successful treating solid tumors in more than 100 dogs, cats, and horses.
That's pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah. We've treated over 150 animals with a variety of tumors, and we're prepared to move into human studies, said the chief executive. Dr. Gordon said the results so far indicated the drug could work to counter a range of malignant growths such as skin cancers, head and neck cancer, breast cancer, and prostate cancer. He also said that the drugs work like a detonator inside tumors, prompting inactive beneficial white cells to begin to fight and destroy the cancer. The company has spent 6 years developing the drug since the previous unknown molecule in the native Australian plant brushwood was discovered, and hopes to raise enough funds to begin trials in 2011. Gordon said that the compound proves the value of retaining Australia's tropical rainforest. The world's rainforests are an amazing biological resource which we need to conserve and cherish. He not only may they hold the secret to many new drugs, they are the home of more than half of all other species with which we share the planet. And the Cancer Council of Australia sounded a note of caution on the development, saying the company had not yet published its research. And we have yet to see the result of this research published in a scientific journal where they would be subject to independent survey and scrutiny. While it's encouraging to see success in animals, this has not been a good predictor of success in humans, Oliver said. So it is far too early to be able to class this as a breakthrough. How did you do that?
I tried to get back to where we were, but I couldn't get back there.
Well, that's because we were right there. You just had to scroll down.
Oh,
I think so.
Sorry. I made a mess there.
That's okay. We will go back to this.
We had a lot of articles on the Obama and what he sees ahead for the damaged Gulf Coast.
So a lot
but
of
that's
stuff.
Kind of a moot point.
Our news is timely on the day that it happens sometimes, and then it changes.
And Italy is planning to install full body scanners.
Yep.
So if you go there, you
look forward to being scanned
by all those Italian guys standing at security.
Yeah.
And the central bank hit a housing market crash forecast. And that's in Ireland. New revelations concerning how the Irish Central Bank hit data in 2006, before it indicating that a housing market crash was imminent, underscores once again how the financial elites covered up signs of the coming economic turmoil in order to exploit the crisis at the expense of people. That was not only in this country, but it was in Ireland and probably in Greece and everywhere else. Months before the Irish housing market started to crumble in early 2007, which was followed by a wider collapse in the UK property market, the Irish Central Bank buried data from a crucial report which suggested that a 15% fall in house prices was around the corner. It was decided in 2006 to exclude the main text of the report data and references to a likely 15% house price overvaluation that was contained in a themed research. The central bank refused to release the minutes of the meeting where the report was discussed, but then deliberately left it out of the financial review document. The story mimics elements of how Goldman Sachs were secretly betting against the U.S. housing market in 2006 and 2007, while peddling to its clients more than $40 billion in securities backed by at least 200,000 risky home mortgages.
We got just a few more minutes. I don't know if you want to see this.
Oh, what's that?
Where was I here? Movie.
Yeah.
This thing here. Short film. It's about 10 minutes.
What BP doesn't want you to see. Let's play this.
See if it's any good.
BP could announce now that they're looking for people with vessels to help with the oil. The contract, everybody want to get on a contract because they're making really good money. But you go to a class, you take a course, and you wait, and there's nothing going on. At first, BP had the contract where BP wasn't liable for anything that would happen to you. As for respiratory problems or if you get injured or anything like that, they took them to court. They made them change the contract. But, I mean, there's nothing going on. When the president comes, they do a dog and pony show for him when he flies over. They put people, busloads of people to work where the helicopter's flying over. The president comes on shore, touches some oil, says, good job, y'all, gets back on the helicopter, goes, flies right back over to people to go back to the airport. They load those people up back on the buses and ship them home.
Is that so?
That is so. And the president of BP said, well, you got to understand, it's very hot in South Louisiana, and we're looking out for their safety. Well, 2 hours? On a beach, cleaning up?
You mean BP put those people there to make it look like
oh, yeah.
they were doing something?
Oh, yeah. If you look at the news footage, you got people in spacesuits carrying empty garbage bags. If you look at the news footage, so what are they doing?
I can get 1,000 people behind me. Where am I going? Where am I going? There's nobody in Lafayette. There's nobody in Venice. We went to Venice. The BP headquarters in Venice.
That's
where everything was started at. We went to Venice to try to help. They had 2 people in the office. Couldn't answer any questions.
Because BP doesn't want to have anything to do with anything.
Yeah.
That's why when we went to class, we asked about the toxicity of the stuff. Well, I'm not a scientist. I can't tell you.
Well, can you get one here?
This is our livelihood. This is our life. Can you get one here? Can you answer one question?
The guy from Boston.
And what they say to that?
We don't deal with that part. Okay, this is why you're not going to get a straight answer out of anybody. Because once y'all do what y'all have to do here, and nobody wants to be vague, and the people that will say something about what's going on, once y'all leave here, y'all do whatever y'all do with a documentary, 3 months, 6 months later. When y'all leave here, I need to get a job to save my house. My way of life is over. So I have to go to BP and beg them for a job. So 6 months when this becomes public domain, what am I going to say to BP? Well, Rodney, you've been talking bad about us. You've been telling what people we don't want to hear. We don't need you working for us anymore. Well, it's all fine and dandy, but somebody's got to say something.
You take away fishing for the next 5-6 years. How do you pay your bills? How do you pay your house notes? You know, now you have a juggle and a balance that you have to try to decide, do you need to go make money or do you not go make money? Stay alive or go work for those companies knowing what happened with the Exxon Valdez. And it's been shown over and over again. You do something of this nature and go work out there and you turn around and die in 10 years. You know, so now these guys are having to decide this. You know, a lot of them, I've heard a lot of them that are, you know, they're going to try to get out there and get everything set up. And then once the cleanup part starts, they don't know if they want to be involved in it. You know, once it comes to handling the oil, they don't know if they want to be involved in it. You know, respirators don't help. The only thing I could imagine that would cause it would be benzene. They said that it's actually, it will actually go in your pores and your skin. So respirators and clothing, and that it doesn't affect it. It doesn't help it. So these guys are stuck between, I mean, I have fishermen apologizing for working this oil spill. You know, not that they don't want to help clean up, but they've never worked for big companies. They don't want to work for big companies, and they damn sure don't want to work for BP. And they all feel like they're working for BP right now, and they feel like they shouldn't be doing it. But they have to make money. They have to live. They have to provide.
Mm-hmm. We're not reporters. Don't claim to be press in any way. This is strictly just trying to figure out what happened here. A couple of friends and myself just came here to help and bring awareness to it because it's our feeling that people should know and they should.
Hey, you might want to check that out on YouTube. It's a short film. BP doesn't want you to see. Okay, and that's pretty good. So we're kind of done.
Yeah.
You know, and have we read this?
Oh, we can read that another time.
Reports have been coming out of the Gulf for days about British patrolling blocking access to beaches and animals cleaning stations, in some instances using private Blackwater-style mercenaries to do so. Journalists as well as citizens have been thwarted in their attempts to see for themselves the extent of the damage being done by the runaway deepwater disaster. Now that I'd like to know what I'd like to see happen, I would like to see 1,000 people, 10,000, 100,000 just show up in hell, show the hell up down there and demand access. Citizens and reporters alike, just get down there, link arms and walk to the beaches and the marshlands and digital cameras and cell phones for instantaneous blogging of what they will see, hear, and smell. Pile into as many rented, borrowed, and begged boats as can be mustered and plow out there to see this crime scene. Dare the gendarmes to stop us.
Okay.
Yeah. So
and
anyway,
that goes on. A lot of other people have said the
but,
same thing.
But you can go to Uconet and check that one out. Enough of this crap. It's called by William River Pitt. So, truth out. So, all right. So, we're going to say goodnight. Join me tomorrow night right here. Same time, same place. And thanks.
Good night, folks.